synthetic decking that lasts, your questions about electrical outlets, and more up next on the Handy Guys Podcast.
Welcome to the Handy Guys Podcast, where we work together on that honey-do list, featuring head-to-head tool challenges and your questions. Here are the Handy Guys themselves, Brian and Paul. What a concept!
Welcome to episode number 68 of the Handy Guys Podcast, and we have an interesting show today because I want to talk about decking material. I know we've talked a lot about decks in the past, Brian, but it's a big commitment when you decide what kind of decking material to use. And I know one of the popular materials these days is a synthetic deck. We're going to talk about why that might be a bad mistake and why you should think seriously about what kind of synthetic deck you choose. Okay. We're also going to answer one of our listener questions that he wants to install some outlets. Okay. And electrical outlets. And if we have time, we'll talk a little bit more about installing ground fault interrupters. And if not, we'll cover that in the next show. So let's get started with our show. But before we do that, let's hand out our contact information.
Okay. You can always call us at area code 615-676-0877. We're on our website, www.handyguyspodcast.com. We have a contact form there. Or you could just email us at handyguyspodcast.com.
Want great deals on tools that the Handy Guys recommend? Click on the Our Store button at www.handyguyspodcast.com.
Okay, Brian, I want to talk a little bit about synthetic or man-made decking materials. At first glance, Brian, it seems like when you compare decking materials, you look at your woods and your composites and you think, the big advantage of composite decking is that it is it seemingly requires no maintenance. You don't have to stain it. You just set it.
That's right. You kind of pick your color, set it and forget it, right? Is that what they say?
Yeah, you pick your color. They're coming up with more ingenious methods to make it look good and make it look like real wood. They have the wood grain in
and
it.
And those that are concerned about cutting down trees or something like that, it's made from sawdust and waste products.
Yeah. And then they used to use the bags from
the trash bags or something.
I don't know if they still do. But now they're trying to get people to cut down on using the grocery bags, the plastic bags. And if they go away, will they still be making these composite decks out of those?
I don't know. But one of the biggest complaints of those has been mold grows on them.
Yes. Problems.
And they're kind of soft. So you need closer joist spacing as well.
Stains.
And you get stain. You know, you drip your juicy cheeseburger you just grilled, and you drip that on there, and it's going to stain. And then what happens is someone gets their power washer out, and they start blowing that composite material to bits.
Right.
And now you got pores in it, and it stains worse, and
blood.
It gets mold. Blood? Blood doesn't wash off very easily.
I don't know. I think it could leave a pretty bad stain.
I would imagine it could.
Especially if you had an accident when you got your power washer.
Right.
They have problems there. And if it's a wood deck, you know, worst case scenario, you try to clean it. If you can't clean it, you scrub it really hard, and you may do some damage to the outside layer, but it's not that plastic. You know, it doesn't just take off the top layer. You end up with gouges, you know.
Right, and wood, you can sand it even if you, you know, are really particular, and you can restain it and things like that.
If you had
to,
you could take a drum sander to it or something.
I guess you could, sure.
As long as you had to, if you didn't have the nail sticking out of it. But the wood is a little more resilient while it does require more maintenance. Now, I did hear, Brian, the other day that company, there's a company called Fiberon, which makes a synthetic deck, and this is not a paid advertisement or anything like that. I just happened to see it. They are putting, they say it's the industry's first and only 10-year stain and fade resistant warranty. That's the other thing. You know, just the damage from the sun.
Sure. That can be very hard on decks, even wood decks.
And again, though, we know it's going to happen to wood, but you just restain it. No big deal. And when it fades, it breaks down the stain.
You can't stain composite decking.
You can't. And interestingly, that Fiberon has two products that has this 10-year stain. One is their composite deck, sort of like what we've been talking about.
Right.
And another one is a PVC deck material.
Right, which I'm interested in finding more about the PVC decking as I'm sort of working on planning out my deck. I was thinking I was going to go Ipe or some type of hardwood or maybe cedar, but I wasn't too fond of the composites because of the staining and the mold issues there.
And it says their Sensibelt PVC line. It's the warranty. It's a limited lifetime warranty. They actually have a limited lifetime warranty. It says not to splinter, check, blister, cup. This is on their PVC again. Rot or suffer structural damage from termites or fungal decay. That's interesting. On the composite deckings, I've actually seen examples where you think the pests wouldn't have anything to do with that. Well, sometimes they will burrow holes into the composite
decking. Yeah, I haven't seen that yet, but that's interesting. Yeah, sure, because it's sawdust and resins, right, holding it together.
So I wouldn't think that would be very common, but the PVC, there's some warranty here. And so they have these stain and fade resistant warranties on their deckings and on their PVC. I haven't seen the product in person, don't know anything about it. It looks good online. But, you know, I'm just looking at pictures. It's nothing like seeing it in person.
Well, if anyone from Fiberon wants to give us a call and talk about that, maybe we can do a more thorough evaluation on that.
Or if you are a listener and you have a Fiberon deck installed or considering it, you know, call our line, our phone number, or you can call us at 615-676-0877 and leave us a message. We'd even consider having you on one of our shows if you've had it installed for a while, either the PVC or the composite. We'd love to hear about it.
Sure, that'd be good.
So check it out. Check out the website. They're fiberondecking.com. Let us know what you think.
It's time for listener questions with the Handy Guy.
Brian, we get some interesting questions from time to time, and I thought this was good because we just last week or 2 weeks ago, when we did our use and occupancy show, we were talking about knob and tube wiring.
Yes, we did mention that.
And we got a caller that called us, not specifically about that, although he mentioned that his old house, his 100-year-old house that he recently purchased, has it. But he's got another electrical question. Why don't you go ahead and read James's question?
Okay, I'm not going to read every word of it. I'll summarize some of it. But first he starts out, "Hey guys, love the podcast. I've listened to every one so far."
Wow. That's hardcore.
That's more than I've listened to, I think.
Wonder if he lives in Reunion.
Maybe. So he goes on to tell about his 100-year-old house, and when he bought it, the seller put a 100-amp service in there for him and so forth. And he says there's three places where there's little or no electricity. Two of the places are on the front and back porches, where he'd like to have some outlets. Also, inside the house, he'd like to have a couple of outlets in the attic or on the third floor of this Victorian of his. Right now, he's just got a bare bulb fixture. So he wants to essentially on the porch put an outlet on the outside opposite of where he's got one on the inside.
So the same walls where there's one on the inside. Right on the
So he wants to just drill a hole from the outside to the inside and through the back of the box and wire it in that way. Can he do that is the gist of his question.
Right. Yeah, so and it sounds like he's done some research and no problem. For the first thing you want to do, and I guess I'll take this question, Brian, but
yeah, go ahead.
I'll start and then you can fill in. But the first thing you want to do, obviously, is to make sure you don't already have too many devices on the circuit in question. If you're going to add to either circuit, assuming it's a different circuit on the back of the house and the front, you know, if you already have 15 devices on a 15 amp circuit or something like that, it's probably already overloaded.
Right.
And you want to look into adding a new circuit.
That's right. So. Because, you know, and so maybe the first thing you want to do, James, is to map out what you've got. You know, an easy way to do that is just to plug a radio in and start throwing some breakers and listen for it to turn off.
Yeah.
And get an understanding of what's hooked up on what circuits, because that still could be some of your old knob and tube wiring, and I don't recommend you tapping into that. And it's given that the porches are on the first floor, it's not going to be that difficult to get a new wire down to the basement, and you've got new service, so maybe that's the way you want to do it.
Assuming he has a basement. So
assuming you have a basement.
Now, he did say, I think that the knob and tube wiring has been removed. We're going to hope that there's no more knob and tube wiring in the house. He said that when he purchased the house. That
no, he still has some active knob and tube.
I thought he said that they would insure it.
The owner agreed to update to 100 amp service, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, maybe the electrician pulled that out. So,
yeah, he said that they wouldn't insure it, the yeah. house, if he still had knob and tube. Okay. I think it's been taken out. Anyway, I'm going to assume it hasn't. You're right. If he's still got knob and tube, then he really needs to do some investigative work on do a thorough review of all the electrical in the entire house. If he's got knob and tube, he may want to consult. Actually, I advise him to consult an electrician. Find out what, you know, their opinion is. You're really playing with fire, so to speak, here. I don't want to advise anyone to add on to knob and tube.
That's right.
So, like you said. But anyway, we'll assume that there isn't. We'll assume, you know, you still need to do in some investigative work, make sure that the wiring you have is decent, that you have, you're a hot and a neutral and a ground to the different outlets, that right. each outlet that's on the circuit is already grounded. You can use a simple tester plug for $6 to do all that.
Sure.
And you really need to do your homework. Now, assuming everything is in place as it should, yes, you can add an outlet outside. Now, let's talk about how you would do that.
Okay.
I suppose there's a couple different methods. One way is simply to take the box out that's on the inside of the house, the electrical box.
So right.
you turn off the circuit. You remove the outlet, take it completely out so that you just have your, assuming it's Romex, your wiring hanging out of the box, Romex. And I would, if that box is nailed in place, I would try to pry it out off the stud or get a hacksaw and cut the nails and just remove the box completely out of that
good idea.
Spot.
Because they make these, what they call a remodel box, James, that can go back in that hole very easily. Yeah. So if you can get the old box out, you've got room to work with your wires.
Right, and you have room to work. So, and the other thing is, if you have to cut around that box a bigger hole, do not worry, because you can get, they used to call them, I think, plaster plates or something like that, the new face plate for the box you're right. going to put in.
It's oversized.
They make them small, medium, and large, and they carry them at all the big box home centers.
Right.
So you can just get if you cut a hole that's significantly bigger than that, you don't want to go crazy.
But you can have a
half inch all the way around the old box, and then put in the new old work box, not to confuse it, but a new box, and the faceplate will still cover that gap. Right.
And then when you cut your hole for your box on the outside, make sure you get the appropriate trim kit for your siding right. and all of that, and a weather-tight box that has a cover that'll cover whatever's plugged in.
You'll find it at the home center. Right. It's got to be a GFCI outlet in a weather-tight, a code-approved box.
Right. And you're not going to want to put that directly behind the box that you've got. It's going to be offset to the side a little bit, because you're likely not going to have enough room in your stud cavity inside the
right,
wall
that's
for
right.
those boxes to be directly one behind the other.
Right.
So it's going to need to be over a couple of inches on the other
exactly.
side of that wall.
Good point. And he asked about, how big does a hole need to be? Well, I told him you could drill a hole, but we don't know what kind of siding. We don't know if he's going through brick.
Right.
We don't know
Is it going to be a surface mount box or flush recessed into the wall?
Right. If he's just got wood siding, he may just have air and siding to cut a hole through. I mean, there may not be much, but either way, if it's surface mounted, the point is the hole needs to be big enough for you to fish the Romex through, assuming you're using Romex.
Right.
Usually, I think if I recall, 3/8 inch, somewhere around there, you'll see. Just to make sure it can fit through. You're not forcing it through or anything like that. It can be snug, but you don't want to be squeezing it through. A bit that's big enough for the cable that you're using. And again, we don't know if it's what amperage it is or anything like that. So if you don't know that stuff, you need to check to make sure if it's a 20-amp circuit using the correct wiring or if it's a 15-amp circuit.
Right.
So, it's a job you can definitely handle. You'll want to check with your local codes to make sure homeowners are permitted to do an electrical job like this. I once had to do a similar job. I submitted a permit application. I was new to the area, and the enforcement officer, code enforcement, just handed it back and said, it's not an expensive enough job for us to even require a permit. So
right.
He said, if you want, you can call. They use an independent inspector for electrical. You can call him and he'll certify it or something,
Right. Well, so, what about his attic? He said he might want to run a fan up there, a radio, maybe his son's slot car track.
Let's talk about the attic, and we'll do that right after this.
Want to be notified of every new Handy Guys podcast episode? Simply enter your email address in our subscription box at handyguyspodcast.com.
Okay, Brian, what specifically does he want to do? He just wants to add outlets in his attic?
Right. He's thinking just two outlets.
Okay.
Just enough to, like he says, run
right.
a, maybe a fan, a radio, slot car track.
Okay.
Well, and all he's got is a bare bulb up in the ceiling.
Right. So, again, we don't have enough detail here, but we'll assume that it's a Victorian. Maybe it's a walk-up attic. He's got some
sure.
nice space, but I'll assume it's unfinished space. It must be if it's just one light. But here's the deal with that. Again, getting back to what we said before, you need to make sure you don't have too many things on this circuit.
Right.
The downside, as you mentioned, Brian, when we were talking about this earlier, of expanding that circuit is you now have a light and the outlets all in the same circuit.
Right. And typically you want to avoid that because if you trip a breaker by plugging something in, you don't want to be left in the dark.
Right. So that electric track or whatever,
right.
you could be stuck up there. Now, I was, if it's like some sort of drop down step situation, then it's really kind of dangerous to be up there. If it's a walk down, it's still kind of dangerous, but it's not quite as bad.
Right.
Especially if there's a light.
Well,
on
I used to
stairs.
Have trains in the attic when I was a kid, and it was a pull down stair
right.
situation, and you know we'd go up there and
sure.
play with trains. So
well, you
I understand.
Can, so assuming it's not overloaded, you can do it. Now the question is, how do you do it, and how do you do it safely? If you're putting the outlets, you know, I assume you're putting them down at a lower level. You're going to be running wiring down. The general rule, and this is, I'm just giving you general ideas. You need to talk with your local code inspector to see what's required in your area. But that wiring an unfinished space, if it's not space that's used, say this was an attic that just had insulation up.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times they say, fine, you can run them over stud bays unprotected, no problem. But it's not a used attic. In this case, where it might be a walk-up or an attic that's accessible, generally speaking, if you're just running Romex wiring, it's got to be up overhead, out of reach. But if you're running it down walls to, say, lower outlets and the service, the areas is accessible, perhaps you're storing stuff there, that wiring could be susceptible to damage. Now,
right.
if you're running it along the inside of a joist and you can keep it from being on the outside of a joist or a wall,
right.
then you might get away with just running the Romex.
Right. And you never staple it across the face of
right.
those rafters.
Exactly.
You're going to drill holes through the rafters.
Or run it above the rafters.
Or
possibly.
Run it above. Because one of the things they don't want you to do is create a place to hang clothes on, right?
Exactly.
On the wires and things
right.
like that.
Yeah, they generally don't want it even above, yeah, you're right, through rafters and joists. But so, again, you may need to talk to your code inspector. There's ways you can protect the wire. Sometimes they allow you to run it through conduit, even if it's Romex, just not the whole way, but just where it drops from the ceiling down the wall, you put it in a piece of conduit to protect it all the way to the outlet.
That's right. So that might be a way to do it. Or they make these tracks that you can get with surface mount boxes
right.
and these little metal tracks to run your wire through. Something like that may be required in your area as well.
And then you could also run through the PVC or the metal conduit. You can run just the stranded
sure.
wire where you pull it through, you know, a hole, you know, and you protect it that way.
Right.
So you might want to do some more research on that. And again, we don't have enough details. Find out, you know, you can get your Black & Decker Advanced Wiring Book, and it covers all those methods. And, you know, jot down a few ideas and maybe check it with a local
right.
expert in your area.
The other thing you might want to do, James, just for grins, is you get to know your house. See if you can figure a way to get from that attic to your basement.
Exactly.
To run a wire.
That's key.
You know what I mean?
Once
so,
you discover that, then you can rewire the whole upstairs if you need to.
That's right. So find out where your wires run. Maybe you've got an old chase that you could use for fishing a wire down to the basement. And if you can get a line or a string down through there from your attic or your third floor to your basement, it's no big deal to pull a new wire up there for a general outlet circuit.
Exactly. You just run it right
from
your
basement.
Yeah, I mean, and then you can use that if you ever need new outlets in some of the rooms on the second floor.
That's right.
You're
you
set.
Can run them into that attic
yeah.
space and then back down into the wall.
And the ways you do that is sometimes you can find space around if there's a central chimney. You can, again, use a chain or something like that. They used to use jam chains, the old-timer
right.
electricians, or you can buy some chains at the hardware store and drop it down in some of those spaces and see if you can get it to go down to the basement. You can also find sometimes space on the outside of the house. If you have balloon framed house, sometimes you can get all the way down into the basement from one of the outside areas. So start doing some investigating there, because as Brian said, once you get the wiring from the basement to the attic, it really solves a lot of future problems.
Sure does.
So, all right, there you have it. Let us know how it goes and what you accomplish with that. Thanks for checking in with the Handy Guys.
And thanks for listening to every one of our shows, James. Appreciate it.
There we go.
You are listening to the Handy Guys Podcast.
All right, Brian, we talked about with James's question about him installing a ground fault circuit interrupter.
Yes.
And we've mentioned them a couple weeks ago in our use and occupancy inspection, but I was helping someone install one of those recently in an older house. The problem is the GFIs are big outlets. They have a big backing to them.
Right.
They're thick.
They're beefy.
Yeah. So when you're installing it, a lot of these older homes have these shallow metal boxes that aren't very deep.
Right. James may have some of those.
Yeah, he may have some. And the problem is if you try to install a GFCI, it's hard to get it to fit with all the wiring.
Right.
And not only it just physically won't fit, or you're just, and if it can make it fit, you're jamming the wiring and they're really tight. And there's a couple ways to solve this problem if you need to install GFCIs into a shallow box. One is you can what?
Replace the box.
Right. Cut out the box, which we've already talked about earlier in this podcast. You can use your fine multi-master tool.
Sure.
If you don't have old-time plaster on lathe, you could use probably a reciprocating saw or a jigsaw maybe if the blade's long enough.
Or a hacksaw.
A hacksaw to get the metal out, right?
Yep.
The problem is on older homes with plaster, you get a lot of vibration and that plaster starts cracking. And in my old house, I dealt with cracking plaster and did a lot of patching. I got good at patching it. But if you don't want to patch it,
sure,
then you got to be really careful. So that's probably the best way, in my opinion. I like to get new boxes in there. I put in they're called old work boxes. They're just boxes that go into openings that are already made. They clamp down to the plaster, the drywall, or whatever it is, wood, lathe, whatever they can get a hold of. You just slide them in there, you turn a screw, and it clamps in. And you pull your wire through the back of the box, and you put it in.
Right.
And then you have a nice new box. It's deep. You know, the wires aren't jammed in there. However, if you're in some situations, maybe I've seen where old boxes are in between two studs and there's hardly any space to work with to get the box out. And that's a really difficult, or maybe it's around tile work and you don't want to mess with that. Or maybe you're just trying to sell your house and you're kind of in a hurry.
Right.
And you don't want to have to be cutting out all these boxes and then doing potential plaster repair
and then
having to paint the whole wall.
Or wallpaper,
because,
whatever.
Right. It's one of those things where a little job can become huge. So I was doing that, and I thought, you know, there's got to be a good solution to this. I've seen homemade face plates where you build them out. In fact, I've seen one in your house, Brian. And I've also seen there's little parts, these
box extenders.
They're box extenders.
Like if you're putting a tile backsplash on and you need to extend the box out a little bit.
They're plastic.
Right. And they're, you know, orange or blue or something.
They have different
like
colors
that.
For different depths. So the 3/8 inch one is a certain color and the 1/2 inch is another color. And they're crazy colors. They're not meant to be seen or exposed.
Right.
So in this case, though, the problem was the box is flush with the finished wall. I need something that looks nice. So I thought, well, I'll cut a piece of wood to the thickness I need to extend it out and put the faceplate on front of that, and then it'll look okay. Or I thought, you know, I know for surface mount wiring, one of the companies that makes surface mount wiring makes an extender so that you can use that to then extend your surface. But that kind of looks institutional.
Right. Doesn't look so good in a finished bathroom or something.
Well, I found a part, and it's made by Leviton, and it's called a shallow wall box extender for GFCI. Amazing. Exactly what I needed. I've got to love the internet. It's not something I don't think you'll see at the most big box stores.
I haven't seen them there. So this is new to me.
Right. And I thought, you know, I'll search. I found that other product I was telling you about for surface mounting. And I'm like, it just doesn't look good. And somehow I fortunately came across this product. And I was like, yes. It's made by Leviton.
Can you get them on the Handy Guys Podcast store?
We'll see if we can put them on the store. It's a part number 6197. So in my case, I wanted 6197-W, which is for white. I think they make it in a silver and a white, or maybe they make it in an ivory or a beige or in a white, something like that. And it gives you a nice finished extender And then I think you put the faceplate and the GFCI hooked attached to that. So it extends it out, and it doesn't say. They don't have any details or diagrams on here. But it looks like maybe it's about 3/8 of an inch,
okay,
which is about what I need.
So you've got these on order.
They're on order. I'm going to get them next week. I'll let you know how they work out. But it could be just the ticket for those people that need GFCIs, right, and shallow work boxes.
Okay.
So there you
have
it.
Sounds like a good solution.
All right. We'll try to put it on our store if we can. And if you have any issues of installing your GFCIs in an older home, please let us know. Contact us at us@handyguyspodcast.com.
Very good. Or call us at 615-676-0877.
That's all we have for this week. Have fun, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
The Handy Guys will be back next week. Same handy time, same handy website.